I'm very happy now to welcome to the program Jan Willem Janssens. He is director of the Earthworks Institute here in Santa Fe. Peter Arnold joins us by phone. He's director of the Arid Lands Institute at Woodbury University in Burbank, California. And Esteban Arellano is from the Embudo Valley Acequia Association. Welcome, gentlemen, to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you, Mary Schneider.
And we are here because coming up this weekend, starting on Friday, is an event called, it's the fourth annual Celebrando las Acequias, Water and Resilience, in Dixon, New Mexico. Let's start talking about acequias. Esteban, you are from, a family, a tradition that has been farming using acequia water for many generations.
Well, my family goes back to 1725 in Embudo. So there's been acequias in the what it used to be the Embudo land grants in 1725. There's 10 acequias that draw water from the Rio Embudo, and there's about four others that draw water from the Rio Grande in the community of Rinconada and along the Rio Grande before you get to like to the Embudo station. But most of the ones we're concerned with are the smaller acequias that get the water from the Rio Embudo. There's five on each side of the river.
Now, how are these acequias being used right now, and how were they used in the past?
Well, traditionally they have been used for agriculture in the past. Most of the crops that were grown were corn, chili, and wheat. Now there's a lot of alfalfa, there's also orchards, plus a lot of vegetable gardens. People grow fruits and vegetables for the Santa Fe market, the Los Alamos market, Española, Taos market. We have about 700 acres under irrigation. Not all of them are under cultivation at this point.
And how are the acequias doing? Do they have the water that they need?
Well, right now we've had enough water. I don't know if it continues as dry as it has been. I think we're going to run out of water, and when that happens, it's that people have to share the water. They divide the water. The four upper acequias get the water for 3 days, then the four lower acequias get it for 4 days, and then ours and another one. We're not part of that sharing agreement because there's always plenty of water, though we're the last ones because of springs that come up on the river.
So are you farming yourself?
Yeah.
What do you farm?
Well, we usually have a small garden of different vegetables, chili, corn, squash, tomatoes.
Are most of the people who are working with these acequias that you're talking about bringing food to the farmers market?
Not everybody, but a lot of them are just growing food for the family use. But there's quite a few that participate in all of the markets. Plus, there's a local market also in Dixon.
Right.
That's starting this coming Wednesday. So a lot of the people that don't grow a lot, that don't have enough to come to Santa Fe, they participate in the local market there in Dixon or in Española.
Jan Willem, tell us about your relationship to this whole question of acequias.
Yeah, Mary Charlotte, several years ago, we got involved with the community when staff members identified that there was a watershed plan just completed, actually, that some people were interested in working with us based on the work that we've been doing here in the Galisteo Basin south of Santa Fe to see if we could do something similar for the Embudo Valley, soil stabilization, erosion control, flood control, revegetation of eroded slopes, all to the benefit of the acequias and the cleanup of the river, which now sees a lot of sediment. So the acequias annually are sedimented, which costs a lot of money to the acequia associations, and the river is so filled with sediment
because of erosion.
Because of erosion, and there's lots of arroyos that come from the escarpment and the valleys around the bigger Embudo Valley that dump all that sediment through the arroyos in the river, in the Embudo River, to the point that the river is in some places just choked with sediment, and that the traditional trout fishery that used to be there 30, 40 years ago is no longer very viable. And the state has identified it as one of the priority rivers that really needs treatment.
So the cause of all of this sediment coming in, clarify that a little bit.
Oh, well, it is a long history of, I think, first of all, a very erosive geological landscape. It's all sandstone material that was uplifted millions of years ago and is now very steep and exposed. And second, that in the last 200 years, sheep grazing, logging, and all forms of land management, grazing included, have led to so much denudation of slopes that that material is now getting at a critical point of massively coming down.
So when you take the plants off it, nothing holds the dirt in place, it rushes into the water.
Yeah, basically a healthy landscape is based on a layer of soil with organic material and roots and plants that hold it all together. In many uplands around Dixon, that sponge, that soil is gone. And so the infiltration of water is very poor, so that water just runs down the steep slopes, sometimes on bedrock, taking everything with it in its path. It ends up in these big washes of arroyos of sediment that push it all down to the river. We've measured that there is just enormous, I don't have the numbers right now, but thousands and thousands, tens of thousands of tons of sediment coming down every year.
Good heavens.
Yes.
And so what is to be done about that? What are you doing? What are others doing?
Okay. So already 15, 20 years ago, the state had identified that it was a high priority area to capture that sediment. For years, there have been all kind of plans and discussions evolved to see what to do. I think the Acequia associations must have been working on it very hard too, Esteban. And so, but since that plan of 2007, we're now looking at, we're honing in on specific arroyos to set up pilot projects for erosion control to show the community how we can work together with the county, with the BLM, who owns actually most of the land directly around Dixon, and the experts who know low impact, relatively affordable erosion control techniques to make that water slow down, make it infiltrate, slow the sediment down so that the impacts on the river and the Acequias is less. And that is kind of a short-term project. And then in the longer term, we're planning to get a final research program together with monitoring data that will allow us to get larger federal dollars for much larger scale solutions, because we have just, well, I think everybody who has been involved there knows that it will cost millions of dollars to really stabilize the soil to the point that the river gets healthier and the Acequias can survive.
Now, Peter Arnold, joining us by phone, you're with the Arid Lands Institute, and you are in California, but also addressing the problem of water and lack of water in the West, particularly in the face of climate change. Tell us about what you're doing and in its relationship to New Mexico.
Fantastic. You know, water scarcity is both the history and also the future of the American West, and we are looking at that very, very critically. Our research institute is unique in a couple ways, and one of them is that it focuses on critical discourse and design innovation as a means for envisioning alternative futures, and it's also unique in that it focuses tightly on the American West. Design, we would argue, plays a very vital role in our understanding of landscape and also our understanding of resource use. In an urbanized setting, it's very difficult to see where your water comes from. It's also very difficult to see all the embodied energy that goes into bringing that water, treating it, distributing it, refiltering it, and then rushing and then pushing it back out to the sea. The interaction and the connection between water, energy use, and climate change, these things are all very closely related. And obviously, the more water we need in our current infrastructural setup, the more energy it takes to bring that water to urbanized areas. And currently, the production of that energy is very carbon intensive. So these two things actually act as a feedback loop. Why would we be interested in the acequias in northern Mexico? That's 900 miles away, for the simple fact that acequia culture is something that is highly resilient. It's very visible, and it's in our estimation, and hopefully the estimation of many others, almost a near perfect model of resource management for the American West. It has long-term historical roots. Those historical roots tend to touch the students that we serve. We're a Hispanic serving institute or university, pardon me. And many of our students are also come from the Middle East, which there's a direct connection there to the ancestral roots of the acequia culture from the Middle East.
So the acequias in the Middle East are the models for the acequias in places like New Mexico?
Well, I think Esteban could probably answer that better, but in a way, the acequia technology has migrated from the Middle East through the Iberian Peninsula to the Americas and up to Mesoamerica and up into the West, and it's every point of this migration, it's changed, and that's something of both celebration and of tremendous interest with our institute, and that's one of the reasons why the Celebrando has been created, is to foreground that uniqueness.
Let's talk about not only acequias as sources for water for gardens and plants and so on, but also as a cultural phenomenon. How does do the acequias link communities and provide a cultural base?
I think that the acequias, you know, when we're talking about acequias, we should not just focus on the canal, which is the actual infrastructure that carries the water. But the acequia, like you say, the acequia culture permeates throughout the whole life of people that live in arid lands. You know, there has to be a way of getting water. And the acequias is a way of getting the water from tributaries or rivers like the Rio Grande into communities. And for that reason, a lot of the communities in northern New Mexico exist because of the acequias. If there weren't any acequias, there wouldn't be any of those communities. So these communities, like Peter said, you know, the word acequia, I traced it back to Yemen. And then it came up what's known as a acequia trail through North Africa and to the Iberian Peninsula, eventually to Mesoamerica and up the Camino Real de Tierra Adentro, which is also known as a Camino de Agua, you know, or the water road, all the way from Mexico City to San Juan or Oqueowingue. So we have that long history. And it's not that the Native Americans didn't have any irrigation. They had irrigation before, but not as widespread as when the acequias were introduced. Every village has, like in the Embudo Valley, you know, it's a small valley, and it has about 14 total acequias. And everyone is unique in its own way, because they all each have a commission of three members, the president, the secretary, and the treasurer. And then they in turn either elect or select a mayordomo, which is a person that oversees the daily function of the acequia. So everything is falls usually under the mayordomo, you know. If there's a flood, he has to be there 24/7 so that he can open the desagües to let the water back into the river so that you don't end up silting all the acequia because of all the silt coming in through the arroyos, as Jan was saying.
I think the way that acequia life is structured kind of underlines one of the differences between northern New Mexico Spanish culture and Anglo-American culture, just the way the authority and labor is, I think, more communal or community-oriented in acequia culture.
Well, an acequia is really like a worker-owned co-op. It's owned by all the what are known as the parciantes. The parciantes are the water rights owners. And the word parciante comes from a parcela or a parcel of land. So everybody that owns a parcel of land that falls under the acequia is a member of the acequia. And but in order for him to use a water, for that person to use a water, they have to be paid up the dues. They have to be caught up with a dues. If not, the mayordomo will tell you, well, I'm sorry, you can't irrigate until you pay up. So there's a way of always, I think it's the most democratic type of institution we have, because it's very few people that are in charge, you know. Like in our acequia, there's only 37 parciantes. The biggest acequia there in the Dixon area has about 110 parciantes. And then there's one that only has about 8. But every acequia has to have the 3 commissioners and the mayordomo, which in a way is kind of like the CEO, you know, is in charge of the overall operation of the acequia on a daily basis.
Right. Now, part of the challenge that all of northern New Mexico is facing in terms of water is invasive species. How is that being addressed?
Actually, at this point, we don't see that as a major problem. At this point, we would be happy to see any vegetation to grow even there.
Oh, okay.
And,
so better a Siberian elm than bare eroded land.
Absolutely, Mayor Charlotte.
Interesting.
I'd like to hear Stefan's point of view about that too. But currently, we don't see in these arroyos many invasive species. And where there are some elms, at this point, I would say, oh, please leave them there, because we need vegetation to cover the soil at this point. We need the soil to even actually be more ready to absorb that water, hold it back on the slopes, on the banks, rather than end up rushing down these arroyos, filling the acequias full with sediment and dumping it like big floods into the river.
What's your point of view on that, Esteban?
My point of view is a little bit different, I guess, because I have to deal with them on a daily basis. They're taking over a lot of the agricultural land.
The elms are?
The elms are sprouting like alfalfa. In my place, just from 1 year to the next, they're already about 6-7 feet tall. And then the root probably is 10 feet deep. So that's the thing, you know, is that in our acequia, we cut down all the elms on the banks of the acequia. Because what was happening is that the seeds were falling into the acequia. Then when I opened my head gate to irrigate my land, all that seed ends up in my property. And they're sprouting like wildfire everywhere, you know. So people are spending a lot of money now to remove the elms.
They're so hard to get rid of.
I can see your point in terms of the arroyos. You know, maybe in the arroyos in some places they do indeed help to retain the soil. But once they get into the agricultural land, they're evil.
No, I totally agree with you, Esteban. I think I was thinking more about the slopes and the arroyos, but once they get onto the acequia system and the fields, yeah, you need to get rid of them to maintain and increase the productivity of the land. Absolutely.
So we're talking about an event that's actually coming up this coming weekend, June 10th through 12th, Friday through Sunday. It's called the 4th Annual Celebrando las Acequias, Water and Resilience. It's sponsored by the Arid Lands Institute. Now, what is going to be happening? Who wants to take that, Peter? Or
sure. Well, Esteban Arellano is the event coordinator, and he and I have been very involved in designing a 3-day event. It starts off with a kind of global overview of historic and prehistoric irrigation practices by Robert Hunt, who's a coming from Brandeis University. There's a fabulous photography exhibit by Sharon Stewart. She also is having a show at Santa Fe. Esteban, I'm sorry, I blanked on the name. Santa Fe Museum of Art, I guess. And then Ron Real will talk about the use of infrastructure as a way of making space and place. On Saturday, there's a emphasis on looking at hydrologic management of acequias. Food is a really important component of that. Traditions through language and land art is introduced in the afternoon by Catherine Harris. There's a panel discussion looking at the state of agriculture in northern New Mexico. And one of the highlights is the dinner and recognition that Esteban can speak to in the evening. And then Sunday is a much more of a kind of technically focused day in which Jan Willem will present his work. We have an engineer from Santa Fe Biohabitats and the noted landscape teacher Brad Lancaster will be doing a presentation and also a workshop in on a problematic site in Dixon.
So this is something for everybody, I think. I mean, this is the idea is that not only people who are really working in this area, but anybody can come and learn about water, learn about acequias.
I think that we started 4 years ago, and the goal was to make the people aware of the value of the acequias, because I think a lot of people are, there's a lot of apathy today, you know, that people, because they work out of the village, they're not taking really the good care of the acequias as they should. And this was started to, so that we could bring that awareness, not only to the local people, but also to show that relation between rural areas and urban areas, you know, that if you have a healthy rural area that's producing food, then those people can come and sell at the local markets, or people from Santa Fe or Albuquerque can go and buy their apples at the Fred Martinez orchard there, which is the biggest orchard in the valley, you know. So it's a kind of also promoting economic development. That's one of the goals also, you know, to promote. But you have to have healthy acequias. The acequias are all silted up with sand from a flood, and we can't irrigate what we planted, then everybody loses.
Right.
So we need to make the people aware how important these fragile systems are. You know, it's the whole acequia landscape is one of the most fragile, because it's in a desert type of a landscape.
Now, one of the issues that I think is very important to discuss is what we call food security. There are a lot of reasons to worry. One of them is the loss of topsoil to development, erosion, misuse of land, industrial agriculture, things like that. Another problem is climate change and the projected decrease of water supply, and just those two things alone. I mean, there's a lot of food that comes into New Mexico from out of state, and when you think about the possibility of producing food and eating locally, that's no small task if you just think about the quantity of food that is required to feed, well, statewide 2 million people.
Yeah, and I think that leads to or directly to the theme of this celebration as well, because I think it is clear to all of us organizers that local food production is really important to make people aware first where their food comes from, like Peter said, in the corollary towards water. And the second piece is if you start or if you continue and support the local food production, you're potentially more resilient than if you're dependent on food that comes 1,500 or 2,000 miles away. And on top of all that, it makes people aware of how important soil and local water in a desert is, so that actually, and that you are not responsible for that as just the single farmer, but you're responsible for that as a community, and not just the community where the food is grown, but also the wider community, so that if you're living in the Santa Fe area, that you realize, like, hey, buying food from Dixon helps in a regional sense, support a local economy, support local people with their knowledge to support, to develop and sustain local food systems with that local economy. It also sustains the local knowledge of how aware we all need to be around other issues of land use, forestry, recreation, that all have an impact on the soil and the water conservation in the uplands, where actually the greatest sponges of that water that eventually flows down and is then, through this very sophisticated, although very old and traditional system, but still very sophisticated in its decision-making process, in its technical and engineering process, applied to the local food production and makes food production possible at an intensity and a productivity that otherwise the land would not be able to support.
So this is the fourth annual Celebrando las Acequias. In the 4 years, Esteban Arellano, that you've been doing this, what kind of changes have you seen in people's awareness about the acequias, about eating local food, and so on?
I think it's, well, you know, it takes a lot of time for people to really start changing their way of doing things. But what I've noticed in some of the acequias, and it's probably more based on the work that we have done in our own acequia, Junta y Ciénega, is that they're seeing it as a model. We know we lowered all the banks. They were very high. When you were cleaning, you were throwing the dirt up and it would come back into your face. And so we started leveling the banks. We started cutting all the invasive species and make it easier for the mayordomo to be able to walk and to patrol the system, which he has to. And now the other people are in the other acequias are saying, well, maybe this is what we should do in ours. So they're taking kind of a cue from us, you know, and starting to look at their own acequia and knowing that some of them are in really bad condition. So I think it's been kind of a model of what we're doing. And then when they also hear people from other perspectives that are working with acequias, I think that has also impacted not only our community, but communities throughout northern New Mexico. Because we're getting people from Mora, we're getting people from Taos, we're getting people from Santa Fe. And the people from Santa Fe that go say, well, you know, too bad that in Santa Fe we only have one acequia now. Whereas at one time there used to be 37 acequias. There used to be a lot of there used to be a lot of terracing here. Now it's all covered with asphalt. And I think people are starting to realize that if we're not careful, a lot of the villages can become little Santa Fe's, you know.
Right, exactly. So, Celebrando las Acequias, Water and Resilience, this Friday through Sunday, June 10th through 12th at the Emburo Mission Building in Dixon, New Mexico. It's a free event. It's open to anybody. And for more information, what should people do?
Arid land. I'm sorry. you can call Esteban Arellano at or you could go to aridlands.woodbury.edu, and I'll let
I'll put that on my website, santafe.radiocafe.org, so if anyone's listening to it, they can just go right to it and click on that. But aridlands at .woodbury.edu, or they can call. Do you want to,
yeah,
Esteban, give your telephone?
Yeah, 505-579-4027.
Well, I want to thank you all very much for being here. Jan Willem Janssens of Earthworks Institute, Peter Arnold of the Arid Lands Institute at Woodbury University, and Esteban Arellano from the Embudo Valley Acequia Association. And we will see you at Celebrando las Acequias.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're streaming live on the web at ksfr.org, podcasting at santafe.radiocafe.org, thanks to Dotfoil Computer Services. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes. You can find us at facebook.com/radiocafe. And my email address is radiocafe@ksfr.org. Stay tuned for the BBC, then local news, then jazz.